This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. Oh, well. Well, I don't know. We are just still in this pandemic mode, but I actually remembered to take my mask off before I started talking. I'm just waiting for a call. Has she called in yet? Baguette? Not yet. Okay, I'm waiting for a call. This is a very appropriate book today. It's When the World Feels Like a Scary Place. Essential Conversations for Anxious Parents and Worried Kids. Oh my goodness, what a book. So I'm going to be talking to her. And then at the bottom of the hour, I'm going to be talking, this is really exciting because for all of you who are fans of Artemis Fowl, the movie is coming out. I think it comes out on the 12th, and it's a new Disney. It's going to be streaming. I don't know if they had planned on a big release in the theaters, but with everything, it's going to be streaming, and it's supposed to be a really, really great film. And for those of you who haven't read Artemis Fowl, I suppose people would compare it to Harry Potter. It's came out about the same time, the first book, and it's different. And I'm really excited that I'm going to be talking to Owen Colfer, the author, who is going to be calling in from Dublin. So I hope that we have a good connection there. It's funny. It's just, I always get excited when I talk to anybody in England or in Ireland or Scotland for that matter. So first I'm going to be talking to this author, and I think probably it's like, whoo, this is the time that we really need this book. And I'm sure that it's going to be something that you will want to get for yourself and for your children. And if you have grandchildren, it's a subject that we are all thinking about at this time. And so I don't know, sometimes books just come out at the right time. I'm sure she was working on it, and but sometimes it's just the luck of the draw that a book comes out at the right time. And this book is certainly one that we all need to understand better how to deal with the situations that we're facing. And so, it's for me, when I look back, I think, whoa, I was so lucky. I was so lucky. I had such a wonderful childhood. And so when we think about what kids are facing today, it's a pretty big deal. But I do want to just say I'm just waiting for the call for her to come on the line, and we will be talking to her in a minute. The author is somebody I think who you will enjoy listening to, and also learning a lot about. So that's going to be in a minute. And remember, meanwhile, I think she's just coming on. Yep. Okay, great. Well, I am so happy to welcome to Joy on Paper today Abigail Giewertz. And the name of the book is When the World Feels Like a Scary Place, Essential Conversations for Anxious Parents and Worried Kids. Whoa, hi, Doc, I should say, Dr. Giewertz. Hi, Abigail.
That's okay. Hi, Patsy. It's a pleasure to be on.
Wow. let's just say this book, it comes out at the appropriate time for so many, many reasons. And I was just mentioning to my listeners, and they know me, I'm from the Upper Peninsula. I'm a Youper. And
you're a Youper.
Yeah, and I don't know, are you originally from Minnesota? Are you in Minnesota now?
I'm in Minnesota now, but I'm actually originally from across the pond.
That's what I was going to say. You don't sound like somebody from Minnesota because they talk a little bit more like this, like the Upers do. So where are you from?
Oh, yeah. I'm from London.
From London. Okay, well, I lived in England for many years. So, I do appreciate the accent. I love it. I miss it. I had this delightful, wonderful childhood in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, and I didn't know there were any problems in the world, to tell you the truth. My biggest problem was being able to afford the newest comic books. So tell us about yourself and your work. You are this book, of course, Essential Conversations for Anxious Parents and Worried Kids. Well, I think everybody's anxious and everybody's worried. So tell us about yourself and about the book.
Sure. Thank you, Patsy. Well, I'm British, originally from England, as I mentioned earlier. And my dad was a child of World War II, and he was evacuated out of London. And for 5 years, from when he was 5 to when he was 10, he was living away from his parents because that was what the authorities in London thought would be best for the children of London. And it caused a sort of nationwide trauma because kids were often placed haphazardly in different homes with people who had no idea of the culture and background and of the kids and all kinds of things. And so I became really interested in understanding the impact of traumatic events on children. And I've spent my career, I'm a mom of 4 kids. That's probably my biggest accomplishment. But in my work life, I've been really interested in studying how traumatic and stressful events affect families. And for the last decade or so, I have had the distinct honor and privilege of learning from and working with our nation's military families. Talk about service, sacrifice, and stress.
Whoa. And they certainly know it. Well, where do we start now? I mean, we have so many things. You didn't write this book just for the pandemic period, right? I mean, this has been a work in progress, I'm sure, for quite a while. But it certainly comes out at the right time.
Right. I started writing this book a few years ago, believe it or not. But if you think back to, say, 2016... political division was very, very high. There were huge and very acrimonious debates about social justice issues, immigration. We were being hit with multiple severe weather events. I saw referrals to my practice of anxious parents and worried kids increase remarkably, and that's backed up by the official statistics that show how, over the last 10 years, anxiety and depression and even suicide have been on the rise. So this really is a public health epidemic. And of course, here we are in 2020 with a pandemic, with such horrendous racial justice issues happening, with it renders me speechless what is going on in the world. And I, back then in 2016, I wanted to provide some guideposts based on what we had learned from our research for parents who didn't have a background in psychology and who weren't privy to what we had learned.
Well, what I like about When the World Feels Like a Scary Place, I like the series of sort of scripts, conversational scripts. I think it makes it a very easy way for parents to sort of get into the subjects and see how they can have a conversation.
Exactly. I wanted it to be very sort of down to earth. So the first chunk of the book really has parents focusing on themselves. As they say, when you get on an airplane, fix your own mask before helping others. Parents, when they sort of take a little bit of time to think about how these huge issues affect them, when we can take a few minutes to respond effectively to our own emotions, to give ourselves the moments of calm, that puts us in a much better place to be able to hear our children. So then I talk a little bit about in the book about what are the skills that we need when we come to an essential conversation, what is an essential conversation? And then the second half of the book, really, as you said, is a series of conversations. Each chapter focuses on a big, scary issue, whether it is social justice issues or climate or violence. And I take parents sort of play by play through not only what you can say or how you apply the principles in action, but also what are some landmines to avoid as well.
Well, this is exactly what people need. You know, a few months ago, no one could imagine that they're going to be spending months, you know, in quarantine, and then after that, very limited movement. So I think, you know, I've been talking to a lot of parents. One of the things I've been trying to promote a lot of children's authors on during the past month or so, because I really want to encourage, parents to get books, not only that the children can read, but that they can read with the children. I think it's so important. People read, adults like audible books, and I always say, well, you are the audible book for your child. Take a book and read it and have that sharing experience, because I think it's very calming if a parent reads a book to a child. And really, you can read a book to a child at an age. I mean, at 10, there's still love. If you read, like, Treasure Island to a child and you do the voices, mm-hmm. or you it becomes a joint thing where you can both calm down.
Exactly. And you have an opportunity for that book to spark conversation. So that is an entree into an essential conversation without really being so pointed and asking your children questions that they may feel awkward about answering. But when you read something in a book, what a great natural conversation starter.
I think it's one of the best ways to connect with children, to have this joint experience. And with you, with the conversations that you outline, I think really will help parents, and then once they sit down with their children, to make it a more natural thing. Because it's hard for me to imagine. Now, of course, the children during World War II, I mean, you had the Blitz in London, and you could understand why the children were sent away. But it's, we're living like in a constant turmoil, and it's must be frightening. And as I said, I look back and I think, what a wonderful, joyous, I really, my childhood was a joy. I didn't do anything. I didn't know anything.
Right.
I was just the books I read that took me to other worlds, which is actually, I started reading Jane Austen at a young age, and that's why I landed up moving to England when I was 21, because I fell in love with Jane Austen. What else do you recommend that parents do? I mean, how do you give an example of how you think parents should approach a certain subject?
Well, I want to pick up on what you said about, your childhood and feeling like there's innocence lost here. And I think that is the ultimate dilemma for parents. We want and need to keep our kids safe. Arguably, that's the most important role we have. And we also have a duty to help our children grow up into independent, functioning, engaged, compassionate, and confident adults. That's the tricky balance. We want to keep them safe, and we want to encourage them to explore. And these essential conversations, I believe, are a medium, just like, you talked about reading books, engaging in a dialogue to help our kids understand and process what's going on in the outside world, so they're not so frozen and paralyzed by it that they don't want, that they're scared to go out, either literally or figuratively. And so, for example, I obviously, we have an ongoing pandemic, which has caused not only, more deaths than we've seen in I don't know how many years. I mean, we have, been a century since the last pandemic. We have no lived experience of this. Our kids have been home from school. We're all on top of each other. And we're worried. We're worried about the people around us getting sick. And even if it's theoretical, even if we live in a small rural area where it hasn't hit, unless we get a vaccine soon, everyone is going to know someone who's been affected by the virus. So how do you sit and talk to your child? Well, the first thing to do is get a handle on your own worry and be able to clear your mind of worry enough, not to fake it, but just enough, so whether it's a deep breath or a walk, to be able to sit down and truly be present and listen to your child. And then you have to kind of answer three questions. Like, when is the best time for me to have this discussion with my child? And ideally, you want to be able to follow your child. You don't want to impose this on your child, but some kids, they don't want to talk. Even if you know they're preoccupied with something, they don't want to talk. So think about when is the best time to have a discussion. And usually it's a time when we're not stressed or distracted by other things. It could be in the evening after dinner, but well before bedtime, for example. How can I put my feelings aside to make this about what my kid needs? And what am I willing to share? What can I share? So am I going to share with my five-year-old who told me that she's worried about grandma getting sick and dying, that I'm also worried about grandma getting sick and dying? Well, if I can put my own worries aside, what I can say is I can validate my child's feelings, because that tells her that her feelings are important and they're good signals. And I can say, you know, honey, I get that you're worried about grandma, because I know that your friend's grandma is really sick and she told you that, and that must be really worrying. And you know what? If I were in your shoes, I would also be really worried. And it's completely natural for us to be worried about something. This is a big thing. You know, it's a valid thing to worry about. And spend some time with that. So how does that make you feel? Your brow is looking furrowed. Your eyes are down. When I look like that, that means that I'm worried. And I know I feel it in my body too, like I get butterflies in my stomach. So you have an opportunity really to sit and talk about the feelings. And that teaches your child that feelings are important. And then you can get on to talking about what the issue is. And maybe the issue is that your child is worried about her grandma, but, you know, she's also really worried that her mom is going to get sick and die. And maybe you're a nurse. And you're going out and treating coronavirus patients, and those are our front line. Those are in the front line of battle right now, our healthcare workers. And that's a hard conversation to have, but your child is thinking that, and so you can't ignore it. But what you can do is you can share what you're doing to keep safe, and what you're doing to keep her safe, and what you're doing to keep grandma safe, and then you can get into a brainstorm, a discussion of what she can do, of what she can do to keep herself safe, and what she can do to let grandma know that she loves her. And even though she can't hug her, she can still get on the FaceTime with her, or show up outside our house and put her hand on the window, or make masks for people who don't have access to them, for example.
Well, you know, it's I just can say that people, really, all of my listeners, I'm sure, are facing this same problem and not knowing how to deal with the situation. And your book, When the World Feels Like a Scary Place, Essential Conversations for Anxious Parents and Worried Kids, is really excellent. And I know people call you Dr. Abby, and I love the name Abigail, by the way. Gewurz.
Very English.
And I love it. It's beautiful. But you know, Dr. Abby, you are out there to help people, and you want to help people. Do you have a website that you want people to go to?
I do. www.abigailgewurz.com. It's spelled ABIGAILGEWIRTZ, all one word. And on the website, I have some additional resources, including a conversation guideline for talking about coronavirus.
Wow. And both the coronavirus and now the the situation, well, right there in Minnesota, our
right.
You know, we have this, the race problem now that we have to work with our children. That right. It was so funny. I was thinking the other day when I left America I thought this was over. I didn't know we'd be facing this kind of situation, and it's so sad.
Right.
That, you know, it's 2020. People, get over all of these things. There's so much joy. There's so much beauty in this world that we can all enjoy together. And it's like I do a lot of interviews with Nat Geo, because when I was a child, my world was maybe Nat Geo books, you know, the magazines that came in, and that was my outside world. I didn't have all of this, you know, stuff that kids see today on television, and so that it was just a different time. And I just wish people would say 2020. Okay, let's get over all of these things. We just have to all think about the animals, think about the environment, think about being good to each other. And certainly your book, I think, will help parents to perhaps calm down themselves, and then to help their children, maybe to find some of that innocence that we had as children.
The beauty and the goodness in the world, and I really hope so. I really do, Patsy. And I want to say that there is a section in the book about issues related to racial inequality and racism. I'm so grateful to my colleague, Dr. Bravada Garrett Akinsanya, here in Minneapolis, who really guided me in conversations to have with children. But I think if there's one silver lining in the horrendous events over the last few months, it's that we see so much goodness. And I think that's really important also to share with our children, not just the bleak and the things that need to be done and the extinct animals and the erosion of our ice caps, but also the good things that people are doing. And I hope that what we will see is a generation of young people who are engaged and compassionate and go out into the world to do good.
Well, Dr. Abby, I want to thank you so much for being on Joy on Paper today. And I will continue to promote the book. For my listeners, I will put a link on my website, and I will, and perhaps, you know, perhaps during the summer you could just come back, and I can have some maybe input from some of my listeners, and even some questions I can ask my listeners to send me questions for you. Would that work?
I would love that, Patsy. It would be a great joy.
Okay, because I think we will still need your advice in July and going on. Okay. Thank you so much.
Thank
again.
Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Take
now.
Care.
Take care. You too.
Bye.
Oh, wow. Oh, goodness gracious. I really, you know, the book is done beautifully. She's really, as I said, this is not one of those slapdash. Sometimes during an event, something will happen. People will slapdash together a book and, you know, try to sell it because it's just relevant to the subject at hand. But this is a book that she's worked on for, you could tell, for many years, a very thoughtful, very intelligently written book. And I love the sample conversations. And I hope that you'll get this book for yourself and for your relatives. I think grandparents should read it as well as children, because often grandparents or aunts and uncles are the ones that a child might be able to talk to even more. So it's definitely a book that you want to have at hand in at this time. And it's called When the World Feels Like a Scary Place: Essential Conversations for Anxious Parents and Worried Kids. And I don't know, essential conversations for everybody in the world, I guess. And I'm just waiting for a call in from Dublin. And it's coming! It's coming! I'm so excited. I can't believe it. I'm going to be like, oh, I'm head over heels crazy about this author. This is so exciting because, you know, there are people that you really, you know, because I love to talk to all authors, but there's a particular reason I'm just so happy to be talking to Owen Colfer. Hi, Owen.
Hello, how are you?
Okay, well, you're in Dublin. No, wait, no, you're not in Dublin. Are you in Dublin or are you in, where are you, at home? And where?
No, I'm in Dublin town.
You're in Dublin town.
Deep in the bowels of a studio here.
Okay. Well, you know, I lived in England a long time. And, one of the greatest things was popping over to Ireland for a wee bit of for a wee bit of a drink.
A wee bit of entertainment. You only have one drink, but it lasts for the whole weekend.
Oh yes, it definitely does. And if you come to a music festival in Wexford or somewhere like that, wow, it lasts a long time. Wow, what can I say about you? This is so exciting. I mean, I always, you know, when I have an author whose book I really like, I say, oh, I hope it's going to be turned into a motion picture. And in this case, your dream has come true. You are going to be a major motion picture.
Oh. And even more, it's from Disney. So I'm really happy about that because they are really the...
Yeah, well, I mean...
Family entertainment, I think. They are the best.
Yeah, well, absolutely. I mean, to be a Disney... Woo! This is... Can you believe it? When you started writing your first book, the first Artemis Fowl book, did you ever imagine that one day it would turn into a Disney film?
No. I think you have this dream, but it's like a dream of winning the lottery. You don't realistically think it's ever going to happen. So you try and forget about it. You try not to think about it. And then one day you get a phone call from Kenneth Branagh to say he's going to direct your movie and can you meet up in London and talk about casting? And it's very, very surreal. It's very, you don't think, your first thought is this can't be happening. But it did happen, and they've made a really lovely, sweet movie, and I'm excited for everybody to see it.
Well, I think I hear it's going to be just terrific. And you know, I was thinking about Artemis. We'll talk about who Artemis is because, but when in book one, I've always wondered why Ho Chi Minh City. Now, I was involved in a project. I've been working on a television project for a long time that actually involves Ho Chi Minh City. So when we haven't gotten it on the air yet, but I'm on a different plane with it because we're talking about the Hanoi Hilton, so that's different. But why Ho Chi Minh City? And I thought, you know, for an Irish author to be writing, and the first thing I get is Ho Chi Minh City. I thought it was great. Have you been to Ho Chi Minh City?
When I was writing that, no, I haven't. I would love to go. At the time when I was writing this, there's no way I could ever have gone to Ho Chi Minh City. It would just be too expensive. But as a child growing up, I was a huge fan of the Ian Fleming James Bond books. And one of the things I liked was how Bond went to all these fantastic, exotic locations around the world. And when you're sitting in your little writing room in Wexford, Ireland, and you've never been anywhere except London was the only place I'd been, I thought, what is the farthest away, most exotic, magical place I could think of? And that was where I landed. I just thought, it just seems mysterious, exotic. And also I thought, the only people who are going to read this book will be from Ireland. But this will be a real exotic trip for them. I had no idea it would be read around the world. I mean, I get a lot of letters from young people in Ho Chi Minh City who read it and are delighted that their city is featured, even in a small way. So to me, this seems like I'm going to just think of the most beautiful, exotic, magical place I can that nobody who has read this book will ever have been. And I picked Ho Chi Minh City.
Well, I think that I'm sure they're very happy because, you know... For most people of a certain age, Ho Chi Minh City has a different connotation. And so it's really, I thought it was really cool. I thought it was really cool that you picked it. It sounds, nice. It just has a nice thing. And of course, you describe it as sweltering. And I happen to know that it is. And I'm actually planning to go to Ho Chi Minh City. I was planning to go in the fall. I was hoping to go to India and other places, to Vietnam. But of course, everything's canceled now. So let's talk about this Artemis character. Of course, he is a genius, so a prodigy. And having dealt with prodigies myself, I was wondering, where did you get the idea of a prodigy? Now, you were a school teacher. Did you have some prodigies that you worked with, or were you yourself a prodigy? Were you, as a child, what were you like as a child?
I think I was an odd little child. I was very small, so I had a very big mouth. That was the only part of me that was big, because sometimes when you're little, having a big mouth keeps you safe, because you can entertain people. But I was quite smart. I was a very bookish child. And I wanted to write a character for children who are like me, in that they're not good at sports. They're not. If there was a sword fight, they would definitely be first to die. I couldn't really climb a ladder successfully. I'm terrible at gardening. So all for kids who are just bookish kids who like to use their brains, I wanted to present an exaggerated version of them, and that's where Artemis came from. So he's no good at anything physical, but that's why all the books are won. All the adventures, he wins by brain power. He never wins by winning a fight. That's not how these books work.
And of course, he's very smart, and he can recognize an Oxford accent. I thought that was so good. I'm not going to talk about the other book that you might be compared to often, but I love the way, well, you're very witty, and I think it's great for children to read an author who's witty and clever, and your books are witty and clever. I'm looking forward to that in the film. But I just love how right away he could say, who's the character he says it to?
He says Noyen,
he says
the waiter in Ho Chi Minh City. Educated at Oxford.
I love that he was able to recognize.
I mean, that's very home. It's very home Sherlock Holmesy, I think.
Yes,
that kind of intellect. That I think definitely that would be influenced by Sherlock Holmes, and that's why I gravitated to characters like that, because they use their mind. That's where it is. You know, that's the most powerful tool they have. And a lot of kids are like that. They're just really smart, and they might not win the egg and spoon race, but they will definitely win a quiz or something like that. And this book then is for those people.
And it is really so such a wonderful series. And of course, not your only series. You are so multi-talented. You're like very prolific. You're always writing and writing and writing. It's quite amazing, and it's wonderful. Isn't it wonderful about being a writer that you can write for years and years? I just had a 97-year-old woman on who's writing about, she's writing about cybercrime, and she's 97 years old. So isn't it wonderful to be a writer?
It is great. It's lovely, and there's no sell-by date. You can keep going as long as you can keep coming up with ideas.
Well,
I've written 40 books now. And I'm trying to get to 50. That is my goal at the moment.
Well, I don't know, how soon they're going to cut me off. I know you're on like a whirlwind tour here. are they?
Yeah, we're one.
They're over there motioning that you have to get off the air with Patsy with a Z, because Patsy with a Z can keep talking to you. I can talk to any, for many Americans, they always think that French accents are sexy, and I've always found the Irish accent sexy. I think it's the best.
I think you're right. I would agree with you.
It is. It really is. There's something, well, there's something hidden behind that accent. You're always wondering. Well, you could have a wee, you could have a wee bit of fun with an Irishman, I think.
You certainly could.
Yeah, you certainly could.
Well, Irishmen are always up for a bit of fun. Yeah.
Yeah, I know. I know. That's why I enjoyed coming to Ireland so often. Well, you know, I don't want to get in trouble with your people. Are your people getting crazy over there that you have to get off? Probably.
I can't see any people.
Oh, well, they told...
I'll probably hear something.
Yeah, they told me there's a hard break at 40 minutes after the hour because you're so important now. I mean, one doesn't get... I often demand an entire hour with an author. I say, I'm not going to talk to them if I can't get the hour. And they'll say, oh, well, you know, this person's so important, you can only get... And I say, well, then I don't want to talk to them. So I have actually refused some famous authors who would only talk to me for 8 minutes. One very famous author said, I give 8 minutes. I said, well, I don't take 8 minutes. But I thought with you I would take at least 10. But I'm dragging this out because I just love to hear you.
I feel the next time we talk, we can talk as long as we want. I'm important for precisely 2 days. Then the movie will be out.
Well,
be back to normal.
Well, I don't know about that. I don't think you'll ever be back to normal now that you are, you know, a major motion picture. This is really exciting, and I am so happy for you because the books are wonderful. I know that, you know, I homeschooled 2 boys, and they
wow.
It was so wonderful that they were great readers, always great readers. And so your books and just are... As I said, because they're smart, you're very smart, and you know you're, and there's this, although how can I say, you're clever. I like your little twists and turns in your books, and Artemis is an interesting kid. So I just want to thank you so much. I'm sure that they're going to get. I'm going to get in so much trouble for keeping you on. But is there any special message you want to give to the kids out there?
I just want to say, especially to the readers who've been following me and sticking with me for 20 years, just to say thanks for the support and to keep reading. Even other people's books, I'm happy with that, just to keep reading.
Well, I think you're wonderful, and you this is well-deserved. You know, it always takes time, but it's certainly paid off. And I think that you've just done a wonderful job with these books and all your books. And I look forward to maybe you would actually come back on for an entire hour on Joy on Paper. How about that, Owen?
I'd love to.
Okay.
That sounds like a deal.
Okay, because I could listen to you for an hour easily. Okay?
Me too. Thanks.
Okay.
Thanks very much.
Okay. And have fun.
Lovely
have fun with this movie. Have
next
so
time
much
for
fun.
An hour.
Okay.
Will.
Okay. Thank you so
bye.
Much. Okay. Bye bye. Owen Colfer. Wow. What an author. Phew. They're going to send me an email saying, hey, you've ruined my whole schedule. You've ruined the schedule. I got that a couple of times where I've kept, you know, once you really enjoy an author, it's books, and you want to talk to them. And when I first started this show, it's very funny. When I first started this show, you know, it's now celebrated the 5th anniversary, and we're into the couple months here. A couple months when I even broadcast from a remote location in my kitchen next to my Whirlpool Whisper dishwasher. It's been so much fun, but I didn't know when I first started. I didn't know anything about the radio business, and I didn't know how many authors had these very very short interviews, five minutes, 8 minutes, and I would, you know, when I talk to people and I'd invite them and. In the beginning, I did not go through publishers or publicists. I just contacted, really, because I didn't know what I was doing. I just looked at my bookshelf, and any book that I liked, I just, you know, sent a message to the author, could you be on my program? And I didn't realize that many of them were very surprised because, like, one of my fourth guests was Douglas Brunt. And I had his book there on my bookshelf right next to me. And so I just, you know, I just contacted him. I sent him a message. And I was, you know, pleasantly surprised when he came back to me immediately. And I didn't realize that the reason he came back to me immediately, I mean, like within a day, was because the book, Ghosts of Manhattan, which is a wonderful book, and I love that book, but I didn't realize that it had already been, you know, it had been out for a while. I had it for like a year. And I didn't know at the time that you cannot get interviews as an author. If your book is a year old, nobody's going to talk to you. So he must have been so shocked that here, you know, he gets a message out of the clear blue sky that I want to talk to him about Ghosts of Manhattan. Well, he hadn't talked about it probably since the release date. Usually authors get a little window of opportunity. It depends on how they're published. But if they're with one of the big five, they get their release date. And if the publishers like them enough, they'll get a book tour. Or if they're not that important, they'll get book signings in and around New York. But if the publisher has some hope for the book, they'll get a book tour. Maybe depends on eight-city tour, usually, and the publishers pay for it, and the authors go out, really, nowadays, on their own, and they have 2 weeks, 3 weeks of promotion, and then maybe some book signings, like, in and around the town wherever they live, and by a month after their book is released, that's it. They don't have any publicity. Nobody talks about their book. Nobody ever calls them up and says, hey, would you like to be on a radio show? Hi, could we talk about your book? I really like your book. So it was very funny. So Douglas Brunt comes on the program, and he's my fourth guest, my first male guest. It was really exciting because I talked to three women in a row, and then I get him on. And again, I didn't know that interviews were, like, normally 5-8 minutes is considered a long interview. And I booked him for the whole, I mean, I put my whole hour out for him. And so we're talking and talking, and I'm joking around with him and having so much fun. He's so interesting. And the book, Ghosts of Manhattan, was particularly relevant because it was about the stock market crash of 2008, which, of course, for anybody in Florida is particularly relevant. We do not forget it. Believe me, anybody out there, if you had real estate in 2008, or if you were in the middle of doing a major project, or if you were about to get green lit for a film, when 2008 happened and everything collapsed around us, and I was supposed to have, I wrote a script for Debbie Reynolds. We were supposed to start filming here just outside of, there's a place, Exit 44, where we were supposed to be filming. Everything collapsed in 2008. So I was so thrilled to talk to Douglas Brunt, and I kept him on for the whole hour. And I think he didn't realize when we started, because he actually was at home and he had his a toddler running around in the background, because I have a feeling he thought it was going to be like a 5-minute interview or 8-minute interview. And I kept him for the whole hour, and he was so sweet. He must have immediately, right after the program, he arranged and he signed a book for me and sent it overnight delivery. So by 10 o'clock the next morning, I had a book signed by him thanking me for an interview. And even then, I didn't realize how important it was, because this happens, and it's now happened quite a few times, where I have called up an author directly, not gone through a publicist, not just because I like the book. If I like a book, I want to talk to the person. And they are always so surprised. I had one very famous author, And I happened to catch her at a, I think she was having a little bit of a happy hour. And I said, I'm inviting you to be on the program. And she said, why? I said, well, I like your book. And she said, yeah, but why? I guess I'd really like you to come on. And she's like, why? I'm not writing anything now. And I said, yeah, but that's all right. I like your books that you've already written. And she said, it'll be a couple. And she's fighting with me. She's like, why do you want me on? And I said, but your books are so great. I really want you on. And I really think she was in the middle of a happy hour. And finally, she got it through her head that, yeah, I wanted her on the program because I like her book. And I didn't care that she hadn't written a book for at that point, she hadn't written a book for 4 or 5 years. But what the heck? Her book that she wrote 20 years ago was great. Why don't I want to talk to her about it? So it's funny when I get this message that, you know, I get Owen Colfer for 10 minutes, and they'll send me a message, and I will tell you one very famous female author. This is like I've been doing the program for about 3 years, and they send me a message that so-and-so will give me 8 minutes, and I wrote back email, well, I don't have 8-minute segments. And the publicist wrote back, well, she says that's all she'll give you. And I wrote back and I said, well, I don't want it. Publicist back and forth. But it's this person, it's this person. She's so famous. I said, I don't do 8 minutes. I don't want 8 minutes. What can I say in 8 minutes? And I wouldn't interview her. And the publicist is like, oh, you're crazy. But I did want, the reason I wanted Owen Colfer, because really Artemis Fowl, the fact that it's coming out as a movie is great. And there are so many kids out there who really need to read books. I am so sad when I'm hearing about kids who are just sitting there, you know, staring at their telephones and texting people and not knowing what to do. I want them to get lost in a series. And Artemis Fowl is a wonderful, wonderful series. When, as I said, when you started, when book one, I get such a kick out of book one. I like all the books, and particularly I like the most recent one, which is the the twin one. But the first one, where he starts off in Ho Chi Minh City, even at the time when I read it, I got such a kick out of it that anyone would start a kid's book, and an Irish author would start a kid's book in Ho Chi Minh City. It was so unexpected and so delightful, and the writing is excellent. If you have any child in your life, now, you know, sometimes it happens. That's why I, you know, although for me the book is the primary thing, so often having a film out there will encourage people to go and read the book. Or it's like what happened with Downton Abbey. Downton Abbey became very, very, very popular series, but they didn't have a book. There was no book. There was no Downton Abbey book. There was no book to sell. Well, they actually landed up selling the scripts, which are ridiculous. But in this case, if a kid sees this series on streaming video on Disney Channel, immediately get them the books, get all the books, just get the whole bunch, because they start at book one. And as I said, Owen Colfer is intelligent, and the writing, the level of writing is so good and so clever, and the use of language is so beautiful. He's just so talented. I if I had a kid that an age between, I don't know, it depends on the kid, but, you know, 8 to 15 or 16 or 18, I would get the whole series for them. Say, have a summer, forget about everything else, and just have a summer of reading and enjoy it, because I was so lucky. I mean, that is all we did when I was a kid. We read books, and we got lost in books, whether it was the Nat Geo magazines, that we imagined worlds and dreamt about, and we turned our own, you know, area, our own part of town into some magic world on our own. Or we read books, Hardy Boys or Nancy Drew or whatever. We got lost in books. We would leave, I know as a kid, we'd leave the house in the morning, peanut butter jelly sandwiches, a jar of Kool-Aid, because we didn't have thermoses, actually. We had jars of Kool-Aid. I don't know. They were warm by the time we drank them, but what the heck? We enjoyed it. And I'm looking back, why didn't we have thermoses? Probably because we lost them. And, you know, in they weren't going to buy us more than one. And so we landed up with jars of Kool-Aid and wonderful and a bunch of books. And either we had our favorite locations where we would read, hammock, of course. Oh, hammock. I wish more kids would have a hammock to read in. Once you get, you string a hammock between trees and you're reading and you have the rustling of the leaves, there is nothing more wonderful than that. That is true paradise, to be in a hammock reading books and not worrying about anything in the world. But if you do have to worry about something in the world, and some of us do, and unfortunately so many people do, try to find a release here. You can read Abby Goritz's book, and you know, help you help yourself in a way, sort of get a handle on it. And her book is When the World Feels Like a Scary Place: Essential Conversations for Anxious Parents and Worried Kids. In a way, it is an essential book at this time with all the problems that we have. But meanwhile, remember, one of the joys of life is to see your words on paper or to hear them in an audible book. Or if you're very, very lucky, that you will hear those magic words, lights, camera, action, your book will be turned into a major motion picture or a streaming video like what is happening to Owen Colfer. He is going to be on the Disney Channel streaming, and it starts on June 12th. It's going to be a wonderful, it's very intelligently done. I've seen the promos for it. I think it's going to be a really great, I don't have Disney, I think I'm going to take at least, you know, I don't would normally watch Disney, but I might take one of those 1 month free trials just so I can watch this, because it is wonderful, and it's exciting to see how a book turns into a film. So, but of course, you won't know how that feels if you don't start writing. So start writing. I keep telling you this, and I will tell you a story on Thursday about somebody who has actually started writing because of me, and it's very exciting. I want to tell her story. But meanwhile, say something nice to somebody, and I'm going to say something nice to Big Ed in the control room. Thank you, Big Ed. Thank you for everything. You are wonderful, and he keeps everything here nice, germ-free, clean, and I don't have to have my mask on while I'm in here. Okay, bye-bye, everybody. Take care.